Well, welcome to another edition of Let's Go Deep. I am genuinely excited about today's guest. You know, Australia is known as probably the world leader in rugby league. New Zealand is arguably the greatest rugby union nation the world has ever seen. Well, my guest today is one of the few people in history who can say, I played union for the All Blacks, for the New Zealand All Blacks, and I played rugby league for Australia, as well as winning several premierships playing at club level in rugby league. He also won a Super 14 Rugby Provincial Championship playing for the Canterbury Crusaders. He's also won the Rugby World Cup playing for New Zealand. And the thing that really impresses me about our next guest is he played professional rugby up until the age of 41, which is almost unheard of. I mean, gee whiz. His name is Brad Thorne, and he joins us now. Brad, welcome to Let's Go Deep.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. Pleased to be on, mate. Yeah.
Mate, what a resume, hey? I mean, playing to 41, I know Kelly Slater sort of reinvented surfing by surfing competitively as one of the best in the world till about the age of 52, but there's a big difference between jumping under a wave and getting smashed by a 120-kilo professional athlete, mate. How did you play so long?
Good genetics, mate. I was fortunate not to get serious injuries, especially when I was younger. That's one of the biggest things. You see young guys, their body hasn't fully developed yet. They hurt a shoulder or they hurt a knee, and then they get out of alignment a bit, and it can affect their careers. I was lucky never really to get serious injury at all. I think my first like real serious one was when I was 39 years old, and I ruptured my bicep. Incredibly fortunate. Even my nose, I remember I finally broke my nose after 400 plus games, and it was in a test match against England, first few seconds of the test match. So, yeah, I was just very fortunate. I was very professional around it. You know, I prepared diligently and, I committed to my gym workout. So, you know, I'm winning a lot of the collisions. So, I just thank God for, how it played out. And somehow, I end up being 41 and I'm still running around.
Pretty amazing, mate. I mean, when you were 30, because, you know, our metabolism starts to slow down at 30. You do start feeling a little bit older at 30. Were you thinking then, oh, maybe a couple more years? Surely you didn't have a goal to play into your 40s.
No, never had that. I thought really like it might be good if I could, you know, playing to 32, 33 was considered pretty good back, you know, when I was coming through. And I thought, you know, perhaps as I got into those late 20s, I could play till I was 35. So I finished a 3-year contract at the Broncos in 2007. And my thoughts were I'll go to England for a couple of years. Maybe if I can get a third year, I'd be 33, 34, 35. But God had other plans for me, and the door was shut in Northern England, which was really sort of unexpected because I had such a great, had 10 years at the Broncos. I'd been an All Black. I had all this. I'd never been injured. I was in good form, all this stuff. But there wasn't the interest there, and that's when I thought about I might go back to rugby and do my other trade. And because I had a mindset that I was, you know, wanted to play in Europe, and I thought I'll go back to Crusaders and have one sort of Super Rugby season and go there. That ended up being another 8 years, 4 years as an All Black with a World Cup win, and then 4 years after that where I lived in places like Japan, Ireland, England, I was down in Dunedin, New Zealand. So incredible how all that plays out.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. I mean, you know, obviously you are a Christian and you can sort of say, well, God did have his hand on your life and seemed to keep you going and open up all these doors for you. But, you know, in the ancient Greek world, Brad, the ancient Greeks, they used sport to prepare their men to fight battles, like actual battles. They were always at risk of invasion by the Persians especially. And so sport was a means to an end, and it wasn't the ultimate thing for them. You obviously played a lot of sport. Let me ask you, what's the best thing you've learned from being an athlete that you can apply into everyday life and others can apply into everyday life?
I think, good preparation and work ethic. is huge, you know, and everyone has God-given talent, but it's, you know, applying some work ethic and discipline, you know, around that. So, you know, my dad used to, the way he sort of encapsulated that was the phrase reward for effort. It came from my primary school motto that he saw one day. He told me, if you do that in your life, son, you're going to achieve some things. So the greater the effort, usually the, you know, the greater the reward, you know. Little effort, little reward. So that work and then that preparation, I think, takes you well anywhere. You know, we have God-given talents, every single one of us. You know, it's where we can apply those, but we have to refine those talents through, you know, some hard work and discipline and, you know, having that positive mindset.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that's just good advice for everyone anywhere in the world. I just want to circle back though. You said you got your nose broken early in a game against England. Was it like a collision and a tackle, or did someone do a cheap shot in the ruck? How did you break your nose?
It's quite interesting, funny you ask that, because I broke my nose probably maybe 17, 20, 25 seconds into the test. Basically, I was trying to smash anything in a white jersey, you know.
Yep.
And I didn't actually break it on an Englishman. It was at Twickenham. It was Richie McCaw. So yep. I came from an angle, and he came from another angle. We both came flying in, head first, face first, and my nose hit his skull. And, it was bleeding for the rest of the test match. And it was a little bit disappointing, because it had been all those years. It must have been about 16 years. Never had you think about all those league games, 400 games, all those high shots. Got to that space. And then the funny thing was after the game, we're in the sheds at Twickenham, and they said they're going to got a specialist ear, nose and mouth doctor, and he's going to check my nose out, because it was out of joint.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's one of the top guys in London, and I was expecting them to this guy to come along, and, you know, there'd be all this, he might have some tools or things that, you know, to fix my nose. I sat there, the guy came, said, "Hi, Brad, I'm just going to fix your nose for you." Stood there, he looked at it, grabbed my nose, and then just crunch moved it, looked back, did it again, like a little bit more, and then goes, "Okay, have a look at the mirror." And I looked in the mirror, and it looked reasonably straight. He said, "How's that? You happy with that?" And I went, "Okay, yeah." It just blew me away, because I just thought, this is the top guy in London, one of the top guys. And end of the day, he's just, it's like anyone else would do. Just move. He said, "You got to do it while it's just been broken, because once it cools down, you know, it makes it hard." So I reckon, looking at it today, I can see it on my screen.
Yeah,
I think you did a pretty good job. I'm happy with it. So, yeah.
Well, I think you did too, mate. It looks better than my nose, and I wasn't a professional rugby player. So, I didn't know that. Do it fresh. Mine got broken when I was a kid too. But, interesting. Hey, maybe he was just making it painful for you to get some revenge. Did you guys beat England that day?
We never lost to England, we beat them, and, there was something with the English about the jerseys were pristine white, you know, and that's, you know, and there's just something that inside me that I love a physical game against the English, you know. I love ripping into them. I love making the jerseys dirty. So, it was a bit of fun that day.
Well, maybe he saw you having that fun, and he made it as painful as he could by using his two fingers to rip your nose back in a joint, mate. Who knows? But, you know, you get back to that work ethic, though. You said your dad told you, you know, you got to work hard, and you've only been given so much talent. When you were a teenager, Brad, were you aware that you had exceptional talent, that you were way more talented than everybody else, or you just felt you were kind of big and strong and you really had to develop your talent?
In the primary schools, I went to school in Aspley on the north side of Brisbane, Aspley's primary, and I made the Queensland primary schools team. You know, as a ruckman, I really loved Australian rules. You know, that was out, the whole area out there. The schools were playing AFL. So when I was 13, I was like 6 foot tall. You know, at the school sports day, I'd win the 100, the 200, the 400, the shot put. You know, so I was fortunate, I guess. You know, it was a big, we had height in our family. My dad's 6'2", my mum's 5'11". So if you put, my mum's quite tall, my dad's reasonably tall. So if you put them together, my brother's 6'8", and I'm 6'5". So
wow.
We were big and athletic. You know, dad was a Otago schoolboy rugby player, and he was a sprint, sort of sprint champion in his age group as well. So there's, I guess, a fair few things going on there for me athletically. But what I didn't have was, I had talent, but I didn't have work ethic. I was quite a lazy kid. I actually had my coach in under 14s, who was a good little coach. He'd been at the club for about 15 years, and he said, "You're the laziest kid I've seen in 15 years, you know? So the talent took me, like I said, I did well with the Australian rules. I was playing rugby league for club, and it took me to a certain place. But other kids get more focused and serious, and they're training properly. And I started to sort of stall. And, it came to a point where my dad had a word to me and basically said, "You know, you're not fit enough, and you don't have any work ethic. You don't have the belief. You back off when there's opportunities to shine, and you don't have that belief in you because you don't have the work ethic and the mindset behind that to have that belief." And he got me to do a run. We're out at Albany Creek at that time. There's a state forest out there, and he got me to do a run that he did. And it was basically, it's quite hilly out in the Bunya Forest out there. And he said, any hills, you're to sprint, and anything that's flat or downhill, you jog. There's no walking. There's no having a break. So the term of that is like fartlek running, where you sort of sprint and then you sort of jog, you never sort of stop. He said, if you don't do that, he got to a point where he'd been trying to encourage me and stuff, but he's probably frustrated. I was 16 years old, I still wasn't progressing, and for the talent that I had, and it was going to be wasted talent, I guess. I was keen on footy, but I wasn't, I was making initial rep teams but not sort of pushing forward from there. And he said, if you don't do that run, I've had enough of driving around to these places. I'm not driving you anymore. I'm out of it. I'm out, you know. That gave me a bit of a awakening. I went, oh, gee, okay. So the following week, I went for a run in the state forest, like he said, and I got halfway through the run and just felt awesome, you know, hard to explain. I felt like the hairs on the back of my neck were up, and I remember stopping and just saying out loud, "This feels good," you know. I said that out loud, and I remember thinking, straight after that, as I turned around and went back, I thought, I know what I'm like, you know. I might do this, I've done this, but, you know, I tried to do things in the past, but I wouldn't stick to it, you know. And I thought, I know what I'm like. I probably won't stick to this. Came a couple of days later, and it was time to do that run. And I remember sitting there thinking, "Are we going to do this run?" And I thought, "Yeah, I am. I'm going to go over and do it." So I go to the forest the second time, and after that, it was game over. Like, completely mindset change. So the first time, I put work in, extra work, not just what I did on Tuesday, Thursday night at footy training. And I got fitter, my mindset completely changed. And when I tried to make the next representative team, which was 4 or 5 weeks later, I made the side. I made my first Queensland team. And when that happened, it sort of sealed it even more because I got reward for effort, just as my dad had talked about. You know, I'd put in effort with the talent that I had. I went into the carnival with belief. And I, in the big moments in that, I didn't shy away or back off. I had the mindset to achieve and to promote and rip in. And from then on, I never didn't make a rep team again. And, you know, in my career, I probably became renowned for my work ethic and drive and my mindset around preparation, all that sort of stuff. So very grateful for my father for stepping up. Sometimes kids need some encouragement. Sometimes they need an arm around the shoulder. Sometimes they need a kick up the backside. And I needed, you know, I needed the latter, you know. So, you know, dad as the father, you know, he had me and my brother, two sons. I thank God for him, and he stepped up to the mark and led the way for me. And like I said, the rest was history. I lost my father 3 years later as a 19-year-old. He passed away. He only got to see seven games. I appreciate that he saw. I played seven first-grade games for the Broncos. And then the following year, he passed away. So, you know, but the job was, even though we missed our father, me and my brother, obviously my mum, her husband, the 20 years or close to 20 years he pumped into me and the 22 years with my brother, the job was done. It was time for us to take it forward. Like I said, I don't mean that and that, you know, obviously I wish he was at my wedding, knew my grandkids, he's around, all this sort of stuff. But I just mean as far as impacting on me and my brother as young men, going into life, you know, I did my hat to him. Job well done.
Yeah. I'm really sorry that you lost your dad, mate. That's pretty young to lose your dad like that. Did you get a chance to really thank him for that? Because it sounds like that conversation literally changed the trajectory or the direction of your whole life. Did you ever get a chance to really thank him for that?
I'd like to think that I would have thanked him. I was just a young guy trying to chip away. Like, I've written a book. It's called Champions Still Extra. Actually got it here.
Hey, give us a look. Oh, nice. Yep.
Book. Yeah. So, Champions Still Extra is another saying that he said. But in the book, I talk about him a lot and how competitive our household was, you know. It was very competitive, you know.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was a great household and, such a role model dad was, you know, the way he treated my mother, his wife, like his best friend, the way he was with me and my brother. Like I said, he'd encourage us, put her arm around her shoulder, but he was also, happy to give us a kick out the backside when we need one as well, you know, which is critical for young men, you know.
Yeah.
Especially in those years around 15, 16, you know, 14, 15, 16, you know, you can be a bit of a punk, you know, you need that, you know, that father around. So, yeah, it was devastating when he passed away. I'd have to say that's the toughest thing in my life, you know, when that happened. It was massive. And to lose him and over the long haul, he's been gone now for, 51, so it's like 32 odd years now. Many times I think of him, and we've got four children, my wedding day, my wife, just being able to be friends with him and have father-son chats that a lot of other people get to have that I don't, you know, have. But that's, you know, part of God's plan, and I believe I'll see dad again. So, yeah.
And mate, I'm sure he's really proud of you as well. I'm sure in heaven, God's allowed him to look down and watch your career and your family and all the things you've done. But do you mind me asking, like, how did he pass away? It sounds like he was pretty young when he passed.
he was only 46 years old, you know, so I'm 51 now, I'm 5 years. You know, even that's given me some perspective, because almost like, in my mind, almost like bonus years every year that he hasn't had, you know. Yeah. So I didn't know my dad as a 50-year-old, you know. He's gone, you know. So he had 6 months before he passed away, he had some tightness in his chest one night, and it was angina. Must be the arteries a bit clogged or something, and they put in a stent or something, and that sort of knocked him around. Dad was a real goer, and he'd been a watchmaker, but he was actually ended up in real estate. He's did really well, and he's a high achieving guy. Probably the backstory of Dad's probably helpful to know. He's grew up in the deep south of New Zealand, same place as I was born, in Mosgiel. There's, you heard of the city Dunedin? It's a little
town.
And his dad was a World War II veteran, but like it says in his, I've read in his papers and stuff, you know, and I know that he battled with anxiety and stuff a lot. And I think probably part of that, maybe in the war or something, as well, but he's an alcoholic, and so it was a, they lived in state housing. Sometimes dinner would be like bread and drippings. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's like the lard that's at the bottom. You smear the, you know,
Like fat, yeah,
yeah. So Dad, he had a strong mother, Scottish. You know, she was born in New Zealand, but that's their heritage. And Dad basically wanted to pour into me and my brother everything he wished he sort of had. He didn't have a great relationship with his dad, and so yeah, that's the backstory. And so like I said, well done to him. He sought out role models. One was a watchmaker, his first boss, who was hard but fair. He had a neighbor, a father, that was a good guy, so he was wise to do that. He really challenged himself. He was a real driver in us coming to Australia. Mum was an awesome, my mother's still alive. She has Alzheimer's, unfortunately. She's in, I've taken her back to New Zealand, where her sister and all our relations are. She's a farm girl. She grew up without a mother, because her mum died when she was an 8-year-old of melanoma. So they sort of, if you think of the dad with his father and mum with the mother, and they came together, and they were best mates, and hardworking, and just wanted the best for me and my brother. So yeah, so Dad, yeah, he, after that, they, I think they put a stent in or a balloon or some sort of, I don't know what the story was, but he was looking, he sort of recovered and was in really good space, and then he'd go riding, cycling with some mates, and have a coffee and on a Sunday morning. And, yeah, he came off his bike three houses down from home. Just three houses from home. Oh, and we lived on a hill, and he was – Dad was gone. So, yeah, it wasn't – it was a tough, tough experience. It was like a king hit, and I hadn't really felt anything like that before. And so – you know, the thing that, you know, I look back on, you can only look back on your life, you just see the Lord. You know, in this life, you know, his will being done. And Dad, like I said, with his impact on me and my brother, we're very grateful for the father he was and whatnot. But I remember saying, because I got up in the morning and there were sirens going on, and I knew something was wrong with Dad, because my mum, she's at work, she's at a hospital, and she must have got, someone must have called and said something's wrong with Dad. And I remember saying over and over, I just, it sensed in my gut. I got in my car, driving around, because I could hear a siren, but I didn't know where it was. I just sensed something was wrong. And I remember I kept saying over and over, I can't do this without you, Dad, you know. Yeah, no. I just knew in my heart, and ended up going in, coming back to the house because the sirens died down, and a neighbour took me into the hospital, who happened to be where Mum, her hospital, Prince Charles, and Dad's on the table. You know, he's gone. And, obviously Mum's distraught and my brother's there. And, that was heavy duty, especially seeing someone who you had hugged and spent so much time with. I was about to turn 20 years of age for like 20 years, and it was just like weird seeing him on the table and he wasn't there, you know. And yeah, all those years I hugged him and been around Dad, and then Dad's body's there, but he's not there, you know. And it was different to, I know that's obvious, but I'm just saying from my perspective, just standing there going, I didn't actually feel a real connection to his body lying there. Yeah. It was like, he's gone, you know. So the thing that I was saying, oh, I can't do this out your dad. Well, you know, God, you can do all things with God. So, even though I lost my father, and it seemed at the time just, you know, it was absolutely brutal, you know, the Lord was there, was always there, and, you know, he's in control, and I've seen him impact so much in my life. Even looking from when I was a little kid with the parents that I have and my life growing up, like you think about standing in that forest, and I told you the hairs on the back of my neck are standing up. Don't you reckon that's a bit odd? Yeah. You know, I didn't just go back and go, oh, that was a good run. Like I stopped and said out loud, this feels good. My whole body was alive. It almost felt like I was floating, you know. That was a key moment because that goes on, you know, like you said, I'm playing until I'm 41. I've played all around the world. Being able to go and talk in prisons and churches and schools and, you know, on podcasts and you know, all sorts of opportunities to represent, I guess, the Lord, you know. It's cool looking back as a 51-year-old just seeing the foot, you know, just seeing the Lord's been there the whole time. He was always there. And, I finally surrendered, you know, my life to him when I was just about to turn 23. And I could do it without Dad. I was wrong, you know, because the Lord's with all of us and he has purpose for us. So, yeah.
Yeah, man, that's still really sad. Like, it's real trauma too, because at that age we're not used to death, are we? Because you've never seen it, man, let alone your own dad, you know, like at a pivotal time in your life when you're trying to make it in sport and he's been such a rock and a pillar for you. I guess, Brady, you probably were tempted at that time, like all of us are when we go through trauma, you can kind of go off the rails a bit, hey, and just start drinking too much and partying too much. Did that sort of happen with you as well?
It was already happening, and Dad was that. Unfortunately, like the night before he died, I'd been out on the town with my mates, and didn't have a crazy night or anything, but I actually saw him before he went cycling because I got home at like 5 in the morning, and it was daylight. And he's up cycling, so I actually got to see. I really believe the Lord let me have that moment because I was with my best mate, and we were with his brother, and he was just dragging on and on and on throughout the night. And I wanted to go home hours before. And then I finally got home at that time where I actually got to see my dad. I reckon the Lord gave me that little moment and where I said, hey, go on, Dad, and whatever. But the night before, he actually said to me, alcohol's going to hurt you, son. You know, it's going to hurt you. So I was already... You know, I signed at the Broncos at 17. I was playing first grade at 19. I'd gone from, like, you know, $75 a week as a 17. You know, I got paid to be a professional footy player to, like, $40,000 a year as a 19, 20-year-old. So You know, I was already sort of on a path of, I guess, living the life. We talk about training hard, playing hard and partying hard. And Dad had gone, like I said, he'd grown up in a situation where he'd seen that what alcohol, the damage it could do. He was a guy who'd drink in moderation. And it wasn't like Dad passed away and then I went off the rail. I was already sort of, I guess like a lot of young people, I was just, you know, binge drinking and carrying on. And that probably happened for another 4 or so years of, just, like I said, playing hard, training hard, playing hard, playing hard. And, it got to a space where there was an emptiness to it, really. I basically had all the stuff that I wished I had dreamed of had, which was a professional football career. I was on a $1 million contract. Like I said, I was played for the Broncos at 19, State of Origin at 21, played for Australia at 22, and had a house, a car, and I'm just there going, with living the life around that, all the boozing and, I guess, you know, womanizing and stuff, there's a real emptiness. It's really surprised me. And because I'd sort of like, I thought this is the life, you know, this is what you're supposed to do, this is cool, you know. And there's a sadness there. There's an emptiness, not a sadness like in depression, but just felt like I'd fallen a long way from my upbringing. And just lacked fulfillment, even though I'm achieving all these things. It wasn't fulfilling. The more stuff I sort of had, I just wanted more stuff, like sugar hits. Like, you know, there was never just a peace around things. So, yeah, for me, that was an interesting equation because if I saw that in my head, like a mass equation, you know, all the stuff I had, that should equal you know, happiness and, you know, everything's great. And I found that really interesting that, like I said, there's an emptiness there and like a nothingness almost. Even though I had everything that, you know, people would look and go, oh, gee, look at that guy, he's got all this stuff. How good it is being him. So, yeah.
Yeah, amazing, huh? I think one of the Beatles said that too, Brad. He said the scariest thing about getting to the top, because obviously the Beatles were just like ruling the world of rock and roll. He said the scariest thing about getting to the top was when I got there, I worked out there was nothing there.
Yeah.
And same that sort was, of thing you're saying.
That was the probably when I was doing stuff that was regrettable, you know, it's, I don't really like to talk too much about it, you know, because, you know, life's gone forward and I've got a wife and kids and, but, you know, when I was boozing and, you know, I guess womanizing and stuff like that, there's a part of you where it's, you're feeling not so good around it. But the worst stage after that is where you just feel nothing. That's the worst stage, where you don't feel anything. It's just a transaction, or it's just you're just using someone's body, or you're just boozing again, or you know. And yeah, my ego was all around me too, but that's the other thing, you know. It was me first, you know. People were a long way down the, you know, care for people list, and it's just self-absorbed, and God wasn't thought about too much at all. Do you know what I mean? That's luckily, when we were in New Zealand, I came over as a 9-year-old. In the early mid-80s, 1984, but we'd grown up going to church, Presbyterian church, and I went to Sunday school, and I had a belief in God as a little kid, and we're a Christian sort of family. We came to Australia, and we went along to a church near where we lived, and we didn't like it. For some reason, Mum and Dad didn't persevere. We just one church. You know, and we'd had an upbringing. Dad had been part of the youth group back in New Zealand, being him and a mate sort of ran it. And And we didn't really, it wasn't until I was around 15 where a neighbour moved in and asked Mum and Dad, would they like to come to church that they went to in Brisbane, Mitchell and Prezzy. And then I'd tag along. And my brother was actually an atheist by his, you know, in the teenage years. And he had a mate at school in year 11, I think it was year 11, who said, come along to my church. And, you know, see, you know, something happened because about 3 weeks later, you know, he became a Christian, you know. So the Lord hadn't forgot the Lord. The Lord didn't forget about the thorns.
Mm.
And he brought us back. And I was the, I guess, the last one of, in the regards to, you know, finally submitting, surrendering with my faith. So, yeah.
So good, mate. And you just referred to the Mitchelton Presby Church. That's a Mitchelton Presbyterian Church, which is a great church. I've heard nothing but good things about that. And I've had interactions and dealings with some of the older sort of established members of that church over the years. But amazing that your brother went from being an atheist to a Christian too, isn't it? That's incredible.
My brother went from being an atheist to smuggling Bibles into China when he went over with a group in Hong Kong. Can you imagine? We weren't really keen on that. We were worried about him. He's like, must be about 18 or something. He's 6'8" guy smuggling Bibles in. Like, when he would go through, he told me when he would go through the stalls and that, he'd have like 20 people following him because they'd never seen someone so big. Like, my brother's massive. You know, he's got a size 17 shoe, and they'd be watching to see what clothes he would buy, might buy. And you can imagine, because you got the communist regime there and Christianity was not welcome, you can imagine anyone looking at him going, no, that's too crazy that someone that like that would be smuggling Bibles, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
So he's had a, he's got a good life. My brother, he lives in Christchurch over in New Zealand there. But, The turning point for me, if I go on around my faith, was at that time, I remembered how I felt as a little kid. You know, when you go to church and you see Sunday school, and I imagine sometimes, you know, Sunday school teachers, they probably, maybe every now and then they might get disillusioned. Is this impacting on these kids? You know, you might have the kid that's been naughty or silly the whole time, or... But I remember those times, you know, and I had it all. I was 22 years old. I was doing all this stuff, and I remembered the joy I used to feel as a kid and learning about Jesus and, you know, the singing the songs and all that, you know. And they were like golden sort of memories, and I'd fall a long way from there, mate, you know, a long way, you know, with where I was at. So that was something for me to, you know, I'm grateful for, you know, that time, the people who impacted you, on you then. But I went on a tour at the end of the year, that year, Australian tour against Great Britain, and there's a guy called Jason Stevens. I don't know if you've heard of Jason.
Yeah, of course. He also became a Christian, yeah.
Yeah, he's from the Cronulla Sharks, and they were our arch enemy, and he's a front row. I was second row, front row. So we're going at it all year. But he's a Christian, he's a tough footballer, you know. And there's occasional niggle in there, you know. But we end up front rowing for Australia together. And we roomed together and we became good mates and we played really well together. And we won that series. We played at Wembley and all this sort of stuff. And it was Super League. And after lunch one day, Steve-O was, we and him were just chatting, and he said, hey, where do you stand with Christianity? And I said, look, like I said, my mum and dad are going, I'd go along a lot, but I'd be like the guy at the back who leaves first, you know, and, you know, I don't know, I've been cornered or, you know, I had a belief in God, but it was sort of like still on my terms, if you know what I mean. And, I said I like Christians, they're nice people. I think they're nice people, but I'm not necessarily a nice person right now, and I'm a bit of a loose unit, you know, loose cannon. And he said, when I become like a nice person, you know, when I'm old or something one day, then I'll be a Christian. But I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to say I'm a Christian and then I'm carrying on getting boozed and carrying on. So, yeah, I just said to Steve, when I change, then I'll be a Christian. And he just said straight back to me, it's, you don't change it, Jesus changes it. And, you know, that was just him saying those words alone. I guess I was ready to hear that message. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes, yeah, I would have heard that many times, I imagine, at church. But I was ready to hear that. And he said, you know, Jesus laid down his life for us on the cross to pay for our sin, to, you know, to take our sin on, you know, onto himself. And he raised it, was raised again 3 days later. He gave us hope through his resurrection. And you need to seek forgiveness for your sins. And you need to ask Jesus into your life, you know. And then he will change you. And I took that on board, and yeah, it was just good chat. But it, you know, when you walk away and something's on your mind, I took that on board. I went back to Australia. It was a successful year. We won the grand final that year. It was 97. We won the grand final, played Queensland, played for Australia. You know, everything been going my way. I went back to Australia over the off-season. I just got even looser, you know, even though I wanted to change. I thought, you know, I'm going to try and change my ways. And, yeah, I just so I got to a point where I woke up one morning and my housemates were out, and I decided, right, I'm going down here. I'm not changing. I want to, but I'm going to do what Jason said. I'm going to ask Jesus into my life. So, yeah, I got down on my knees in my lounge room. Wasn't at a church or anything. Wasn't around. You know, I was just by myself at my house. And I just had an honest prayer where I said, the prayer was pretty funny, you think about it. I said, Jesus, if you're there, I don't know if you're there or not, but if you're there, please forgive me for the sins for the things I've done wrong. I said, there's things that I've had real shocker, you know, this is how I was saying it. There's things where it's not so bad, you know, little white lies or whatever, but for all that I've done, please forgive me. Please take this sin from me and, you know, onto yourself. And I said, with my life, please come into my life. Here's the keys. Like for me, you know, I talked about the mass equation before. For me, it was like, here's the car keys. You drive now. I've been driving and it sucks. Even though I've got all this stuff, I've got everything. And I'm empty and I have no peace. So please, I submit my life to you. I surrender my life. Please come into my life and turn my life around. And, so I said that prayer. And then I got up, and it wasn't like nothing special happened, you know. I just thought, okay, I've said that prayer, and I'll just keep it to myself because, I don't want to be someone that says I'm a Christian now, but then, nothing's changed and it's the same behaviors. And
yeah,
I thought I've just asked Jesus into my life, and I've grown up hearing about, you know, Noah's Ark, and all the Bible stories, and at church, you know all about Jesus and stuff. But I thought, I've asked him into his life. I think it'd be wise to look into him again. At this time, so I looked at the four Gospels, and I started with Mark because I think one of my friends, who's a Christian guy, said that's probably the easiest one to start with. I think it's like 14 chapters or something. It's quite sort of straight up.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I started reading the Bible, and what was crazy was from that time I couldn't found it hard to put it down. I was just felt like I was just like, it was just, in the past had sort of been a bit boring and I didn't know where to read, and also now it was like every sentence was hit me. And it's the Holy Spirit at work in me, you know.
Yeah.
My eyes are open. My heart was open. So, just had a massive impact. I was sitting there for hours reading the Bible. Yeah. About Jesus. And the thing that was crazy was that all the stuff that we talked about, Wayne Bennett talked about, you know, caring about your mate, work ethic, discipline, you know, humility, all the things that help make, you know, in a team environment, you got to sort of put the team before self. And Jesus, 2,000 years ago, this was the nature of Christ. And it blew me away. Because it's like, hang on, Wayne, you've cheated. A lot of these things are from the nature of who God is, you know. And I probably had a couple of months where I battled still, where I had, I guess, old habits or things. There was a battle going on, I guess, spiritually around me, I would say. Came to a sort of a point where that battle was won, and I just felt peace like I hadn't felt up until that point. You know, the life I was living, the wrong sort of stuff was on my mind in the evening and the morning, around all this sort of behavior and stuff. You can imagine what I'm, talking about. I remember just going to bed at night, and there was just nothing in my head, no thoughts, just peace. And in the morning, and then the next night, and then a month later, then 3 months later, and things just changed massively. And the easiest way to say, to describe is, like I said before, I was all about me, what I could get out of things, what I want. I bit and scratched my way to the top of footy. You know, once I got that Forest run, I just looked after number one. I got achievement, but it was, like I said, I got all that stuff, and then I get there and, oh, what's here? Like you said, the Beatles guy. And so, it was, I'd been all about me, and then people were way down here, and then God's the blow. And that flipped, where all of a sudden I became very aware of wanting to know what God, Christ in my life, Jesus, the Holy Spirit at work in my life, and how can I honor the Lord this day, and getting to know him through the scripture and his ways, and just the magnitude of what had been put down, a God that created us for purpose, who gave his one and only son, to take our punishment. Just the magnitude of that, how that impacts your life, how you live it from there, and just the joy of the resurrection, of what the hope that means for us, and a God that created all things, and the love in his heart, God's nature is just that was just a huge shift for me. And people became way more important, how they were going, how they were faring, contributing, caring about them. I hadn't been doing that, if I was honest. I was really deep. I might feign it, but deep down, if I was really honest, I was always looking after number one. And then the third thing was finally me. And don't get me wrong, I still, to this day, yeah, you're battling with your ego and your, you know, I guess different things, self-importance, different things, you know. It's a life journey in that, you know, we're not. I was definitely flipped, and that's probably the easiest way to describe, you know, and in the last, you know, 28 years or whatever it's been, that's been that walk with the Lord, trying to daily live his purpose that he puts in front of me, and just honour him and have that relationship with him that we were always made to have with him. The relationship's good now because my sin has been dealt with, and the one that created me for a purpose, you know, I surrender to that purpose. And in that, I, whether it's up good times or bad, there's a peace and a joy and a fulfillment because I'm, you know, walking with the Lord.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And he, as he always did with the Israelites, every play, you know, he goes before us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's where it's at.
Well, mate, just listening to that story, Brad, I feel humbled. Just what God's done in your life, and I mean, it's supernatural for you, just this successful footy player playing internationally, playing for one of the top clubs in the world, Brisbane Broncos, playing for your state in the state of origin, and for you to be on your knees just asking Jesus to come into your life. Man, and he obviously did, and here you are today. But I also love the thought of you and the other prop forward playing for Australia on a tour of England, because you know, I'm old enough to remember the stories, Brad, from the old tours from the 80s and that, the end, before there were smartphones and everyone videoing everyone in public and all the antics and all the things that some of the players got up to on tours. And that goes for even club-level rugby players, mate. Yep. You know, and even myself, I'm from a surf lifesaving background, and when the Australian national titles are on, the things that went on, you know, just all the pranks and the drinking and the partying and the fact that you got two prop forwards talking about Jesus, one's telling the other one about Jesus. And good on Jason Stevens, eh, for going there with you and sharing his faith with you.
Yeah, he if he just sits there and shuts up, that doesn't happen. He was brave, you know, he had it in him to, he cared about God enough and me to be vulnerable enough to share. At the, you know, expense of maybe me bagging him or coming at him or so, and he's done that many times, Jason. And I've got to do that. And this is the journey and Lord's, God's plan and purpose for us, you know. And the funny thing about me and Jason was he was a party animal as well. You know, we both were loose, and there's regretful lives that we, you know, stuff with, you know, that party hard lifestyle. So ironic that, you know, we're there talking about Jesus and we he was transformed. A guy called Brad McKay, do you remember him?
The I life? Do. He's a
Christian. So he's the guy that impacted Jason.
Oh, wow, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So Jason impacted me. And we'll never know God's, like, story. He's the greatest storyteller of all time. You know, there's so many things in play that he's always known, always, you know, these are things that before time began, like, he, you know, he knows his purpose for all of us, and he's known us. And it's just so cool. It's the coolest thing ever, you know, and I always talk about Jason, always grateful that he had the courage to share, because there was times where he'd get banter from the group being a Christian, and you know, sometimes it's a bit not so good. You know, you put that in perspective and you look at these people around the world that cost their life to follow Jesus, you know. Yeah. And you look at it and you think, I think it's 380 million Christians are persecuted open doors, like it to, you know, to where it's serious persecution. To get a few jibes and maybe thought badly of isn't so tough, is it, you know, where we are. So we should be grateful and when the Lord, I guess, gives us an opportunity to share. A lot of the time it's just through your actions. The actions of Jason were what spoke to me that we had that friendship, because he played tough, hard footy. He was just a good guy. And yeah. He had a peace that I didn't have. I knew it. I could see it.
Mm.
And so those life actions spoke to me before his words did. Then when he spoke through his actions, I respected his words. And and like I said, there's a saying that I really like. A friend told me once, the teacher will arrive when the student is ready to learn. And if you think of God's the teacher, I was finally ready to learn. You know, to learn. Like I said, I would have probably heard those messages many times around things.
Yeah.
But in God's timing, He helped my heart to open up to that.
It's so good, mate. But also just so good that Jason Stevens was so bold. And I didn't know that Brad McKay, I think he played for St. George Illawarra from memory, didn't he, Brad McKay? Was he?
Yes, he did. Yep.
And
very
I think they
good
got
footballer, played for
very
Australia.
Good, yeah. And they could never beat the Broncos, the Brisbane Broncos, in a grand final. I remember there's a few grand finals between St. George and the Broncos, and they could never get over the line. But you know, I grew up on the beaches of Sydney, Brad, and surfing was a big deal to us. And yeah, it's the same deal. Like there were guys becoming Christians down there, surfers, and they started having like these surfing competitions, and some of the best surfers in the world would compete in these competitions. And we'd go along, us non-Christian kids, and yeah, the commentator, some of the surfers were great surfers, but they're Christians, and the commentators would be saying things like, "Oh, I bet this guy's praising God for that wave." And us local kids, we're like, "Oh, you're joking. Like, what is wrong with these Christians, you know?" And then they'd, and the Christian guys would start talking to us. But like you said, they were bold about it. They were unashamed. At the time, we laughed at them and we thought we were too cool for them because we were partying and all the rest. But a number of my friends became professional surfers too. So they were also very good surfers. And, you know, but it's funny, those seeds, they go in your heart, don't they? And eventually, I got invited along to a Bible study group. And there's a guy there who was one of the best surfers in the world at the time, had just become a Christian. And he gets in the lift to go to this Bible study group. And I get in the lift and he's like, "What are you doing here?" And I'm like, "Well, what are you doing here?" He goes, "Well, I've become a Christian, you know." And he goes, "Are you winning?" And I remember thinking to myself, "No, I'm not winning, actually. I'm feeling pretty bad about life. I don't know where I'm going in life. I'm a bit lost." But of course I said, "Oh, yeah, of course, mate." But yeah, got upstairs and we went to this Bible study. And that was the night I received Jesus into my heart. But definitely the boldness of those Christians on the beaches there, just stepping out and sharing their faith publicly, it definitely had an impact on me. And I'm sure you sharing your faith and your story, and obviously Jason, you just don't know the ripple effect boldness has, do you?
You'll never know. And that God is the creator of all things. He's a master, and he tells great stories. And you know, there'll be a time when we will realize, "Oh, far out, look at this and this and this." But, you know, you have the surfing scene, you've got the rugby league with myself, with Jason. You know, you have people in an office, people, a caretaker, you have a kid at school. The Lord's at work in all those situations for the greater good of, his children coming to him, know him. And I myself can remember giving a RE teacher, not a real hard time, but, you know, sort of scoffing when I was in grade 6 or something, you know, because we'd come to Australia, we weren't going to church anymore. And I'd forgotten a bit, you know, and you look back on that, you know, that RE teacher, if they could know that, I'd be on my knees, you know, surrendering my life. And I didn't forget, I haven't forgotten how I was, you know, that day with the RE teacher, you know, so, which I, you know, regretted, you know. but, you know, sometimes people, that RE teacher, I don't remember the class being that sort of warm and, you know, engaging. You know, we're at a state school. There's many people who are bold in their faith and, you know, probably doesn't see much reward, you know. It might be years down the track with someone through someone else or whatever, but it's funny how I'm forgotten that day when I was, you know, probably being a bit cheeky that day, you know. So I'm just, what I'm saying is, if anyone's listening, it's encouraging as a Christian that, yeah, it's not all that, it's not all going to be just people saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a Christian now. Yeah, there's a lot of hard roads and, we're just honouring the Lord. And a lot of the time that's just through your actions, how you live your life. And then, like I said, your words, you know, in the end have to be respected. But yeah, a lot of thought, a prayer for the, you know, persecuted Christians around the world who, you know, they there's a lot of hard times for people, because they follow Jesus.
Yeah, 100%, mate. And don't feel bad about you treating your RE teacher bad too. I remember I used to go to mine and sing Highway to Hell just to annoy them. You know, I was just the worst kid in the class. I was a brat. But like you said, that love, and I still remember that woman. She was so loving and kind and didn't react to me being so rude. And yeah, you know, like you said, God's always working. But Brad, I want to talk to you about, you know, the Bible says, you know, when your mother and your father, if they forsake you, the Lord takes you up. Because obviously you lost your dad at 19, but then you found a faith in Jesus at about the age of 23, 24. Tell us, in because there could be some people listening right now, and they've suffered real loss as well. Tell us how God started to heal your heart and almost became that replacement father figure in your life. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, even when I was saying that, you know, I don't know if it's sometimes you're not sure what you think or, you know, if God's, you know, at work, but it felt like I said, I was saying, I can't do it without you, but the Lord was there and you will do what you're purposed to do with the Lord's there. He's our father. I got my dad. I love my dad, but you know, God's my father. And, you know, he has his purpose for me and for you and for all of us. So as things went along, I read my Bible and I remember sitting at church. I'd be on the edge of the seat. Oh, it's just trying to take in everything, you know, complete, just the Holy Spirit at work in my life. But I felt like God helped me put pillars in my life because I was a loose cannon, a loose guy. So I needed some structure, and so I had church on Sunday, but that's a long time between the next Sunday.
Yeah.
When you've got a lifestyle and you're around a lifestyle where you can be pretty loose. Well, a cool thing happened at church where one of the guys about 3-4 years older than me, a really sharp guy, but because I was already a Bronco, people were a little bit standoffish of me at church, you know, because and I'm this big imposing sort of guy, you know, and I keep.
Well, you're massive, Brad. You're actually huge. Like, for anyone watching this or listening, I bumped into Brad. Our sons went to the same school, to the BBC there, and I think our sons were playing in the same team in grade 8. I remember you watching him play one day, and I was walking across the practice field to where all the dads and the mums were, and I'm thinking, who's this bloke? He's massive. Like, there's this big unit standing there. And I think you were staring me down at the time, so you're probably looking at me thinking, why is this guy so small? I don't know. You were thinking, but I remember looking back at you thinking, oh, that's Brad Thorne. And yeah, you are a big unit, mate. You're about, 6'5", but you're actually built proportionally as well. So I can understand why some of the people at church are a bit standoffish. They're probably thinking, oh, yeah, who's this bloke?
I do too, yeah. And like I said before, just remember, I'm the little guy in my family. My brother's 6'8", you know, 120 kilos. So I always felt like the cheeky little guy. But what I was saying
you're at church and people aren't talking to you mostly.
I had a guy, Steve Buchanan, his name is, and he said there's a thing called Christianity Explored or Explained. You probably heard of it. It's like a 6-week thing. Would you want to do it with me? And I said, yeah. I was itching. I said, yeah, let's do it. So we met on a Thursday, And that was huge for me. And I went through that sort of course, just learning about Jesus, you know, because I'm reading, but then I've got a guy who's a more mature guy and his faith and that. And we went through this thing. And then we said, he said, when we got to the end of it, I was just loving it. And we'd, you know, talk over faith. And I was just new in the faith, you know. And he said, why don't we just keep meeting and do Bible study? So we did that for like a year or two until finally he said, you know, which felt comfortable for me. I just got to ask lots of questions and stuff. And then I joined like a Bible study group, which was really cool. So that was on a Thursday. So I've got, you can see here, Sunday, I got Thursday. And then the third thing, there's three pillars in my week. The third one's an interesting one because I've been reading the Bible, and my brother had fasted a few times, and I didn't like that at all because I love my food. And I was like, some reason it was playing on my mind. And I was like, I don't want anything to do with fasting because I'm a consumer. I love food. So I looked in the Bible anywhere that was about fasting, and there's some bits that said, oh, it's good to fast. The disciples did this or this or that. And then other bits were like, oh, it wasn't necessary or something. And it was sort of just playing on my mind, but which is funny. And then one day it was just going on in my mind, and I just think God was putting it there. And one day on a Thursday, we had our first trial game in 1999, it might have been. And it was on the Saturday, and this was on a Thursday. So I sat there with my brekkie, had my cornflakes, my Weet-Bix, whatever, and I just got to this point where I said, hey, God, if you want me to eat, I'll eat. If you don't want me to eat, I won't eat. And I'd already talked to Mum about it. She said, that's silly, because you're a professional footballer. You've got a game in 2 days' time. And, you know, like I had all these things in my head. I got to that point where I just said that. I just sat there, I'm out at Albany Creek, in front of a dish. I hadn't, you know, when you talk, say prayers and that, and, you know, things play out. But this was like a direct talk. Please, God, talk to me. Tell me. I'll either eat or not eat. You tell me. And I never really said a prayer like that, you know. And my mind was just nothing in my mind. I just sat there for about 15 seconds. And then I had this sentence that came in my head. And the sentence was this: is a game of football more important than me? And I went, the first thing, just a side note to that, if it was me, I would have said, is a game of football more important than God? And that wasn't what the sentence was. The sentence was, out of nowhere, when I've been thinking nothing, is a game of football more important than me? And I said, no, it's not. Pushed away the cereal bowl, and I didn't eat the rest of that day, and it almost killed me because I'm prolific. I was known it when I was a little kid. I had a tubby big belly because I just love my food, you know.
Yeah.
And I was trained as an athlete, so I didn't have the belly, but I was loved my food. And that first time I did it, it almost killed me. I just did it till like 12 at night, and then at 12 at night I was like eating. And,
yeah.
But anyway, I had a friend who said, why don't we fast and come together and we'll pray about some stuff, you know, thanks, whatever. So that what happened with the game of footy, a big storm came in. It got pushed to the Sunday, which happened after I'd fasted. So even though I would have been fine, it wouldn't have affected me 2 days later. It was just funny how that happened, how after I made that decision,
yes,
there's a storm, and it was up in central Queensland, Rockhampton. It was a trial game. It was the first trial game, and it got moved a day further because of the storm. But what I worked out with the fasting, I started to do that every week, and I decided I'd do it on a Tuesday because I wanted to be a distance from the game because I'm a professional athlete.
Yeah.
And Wednesday was my day off, and I didn't want to not be able to eat on my day off. I wanted just to have a day off and enjoy. So yeah. I did it on the Tuesday. The Tuesday, the thing about the Tuesday is my hardest day. A double session, weights and work in the morning, forward work. And in the afternoon, I would do, we would do, league training, but we do, you know, fitness and stuff as well. So by the time I'd come home, the way I'd fast is I'd just go from the dinner last night to the dinner the next Tuesday night. So around 6:30, sort of 6:30, 7 o'clock, I'd have my dinner. So it's not like a full day or nothing. It's at dinner to dinner, sort of 24 hours.
Yeah.
And I'd get down and I would pray. And I'd spend like 40-odd minutes where I'd pray for anyone that I knew and anyone who was sick or anyone I knew. It was a day where I'd set aside for the Lord. So then I ended up having these pillars. Tuesday or Sunday was church. Tuesday was fasting. Thursday was the Bible study with a guy. I believe God gave me those things in the week because, you know, I needed some discipline and structure, you know, because if I hadn't had that, that's, like I said, just going to church on Sunday and then the next Sunday, there's a lot that goes on in between that. And that was big for me. That was, I feel, God putting some things in place for me. And I still do that to this day. So yesterday I fasted. To this day, do you know why I still do it? Because he hasn't told me to stop yet.
Yeah, cool.
And I still, there's people I've been praying for you know, close to 27 years. There's been a lot of answer to prayer for people who've been, you know, pregnancies or wanting to have babies or sickness or just, you know, it's just a cool, selfless thing to pray for people. And God doesn't need you to do that, but it's like he includes you and you get encouraged. But like I said, such a pillar. It was on my hardest day at training. And the hardest thing about that training session was they would put on lunch for us on Tuesday. So I had to watch the team eat. Wayne Bennett used to go and join the guys. You'd get annoyed because I'd walk off. I couldn't watch them eat. I was so hungry, you know. But that gave me a real good discipline. And mindset-wise, if you think about me in my playing days, I became renowned for my mindset, for my focus, for my discipline, for playing and pressure and big match occasions. And I think, like the fasting, I had to like I said, as a consumer, I can take control of my body's not dictating to me. I'm dictating to it, you know, which this day is set aside for the Lord. And, you know, the Thursday, the encouragement I got from the Bible studies and then church, you know, it was great.
Mate, that is awesome. I don't know if you know, John Wesley, the famous English revivalist, he started the Methodist Church. His dad told him to fast every Monday and Friday, I think it was. Same as you, he'd only fast until dinner time. But he did it as a discipline thing. It wasn't that he was fasting for revival. His dad said, if you don't want to sin, son, fast twice a week. And he used to fast twice a week. But the funny thing is, Brady, I'm just thinking about your long playing career. Wesley lived, I think, into his 60s or 70s in an era when most men died in their 40s. You know, he was so much healthier than everybody else. And I think there's even physical health benefits from it, the detox of fasting as well, not to mention the spiritual benefits that you've talked about. So good on you, man, for fasting all those years and you're still doing it to this day. And yeah, and like you said, we don't have to do these things, do we? But it's a discipline thing. And even the Apostle Paul, I read his life and I just think he must have been one of the most disciplined men that's ever walked the planet. And to go through the hardship he went through, but just to keep faithfully preaching and discipling and shaking nations like he did. And I know he mentioned fasting was a big part of his lifestyle as well. So, yeah, that's really encouraging to know. So I want to ask you, mate, do you think, honestly, well, tell me how do you think God even made you a better footballer as well as the discipline? In other ways, how do you think God actually made you do better at football than if you just had been Brad Thorne living for himself?
I just think in every way, because if you look at the nature of Christ, love, right, caring about your mate, love for the team first, yourself second. So the team sports service, where you put the, you know, the team is cohesive when it plays together, not going individual. That's not a good team. So that's humans at our best. Love. Love the Lord with all your heart, soul, strength, mind. Love your fellow man. You know, humility. When you get full of yourself and prideful and boastful and carrying on, you know, a fall, you know, what's it say in the Bible? Pride comes before the fall, you know. You're full of yourself and you underestimate and you're not listening to anyone. And, you know, so humility to grow, to listen, to learn, to put others before yourself. I can go through every perseverance, you know. What's that, James 1:2, brothers and sisters, what is it? Consider it pure joy when you come across trials of many kinds.
Yeah.
Because the testing of faith, of your faith, produces perseverance.
Yeah.
And when that finishes its job, you're mature and complete, not lacking anything. So perseverance, to persevere, to push through, to stay at a task, to over and over and over again to achieve a goal. You can go through every wisdom, you know, courage to take a hit up, to call someone out at training when they're falling, you know, even though they're not going to like it. You know, you can go through every nature of God. You know, one of the ones I love is gentleness. You know, I'm a bigger guy. I'm a big physical guy, a rough sort of guy, but there's a saying, gentleness isn't weakness, it's just power under control. And I would like to think I'm gentle. I'm a gentle guy, you know. Even though I'm 120 kilo, sort of, or 15 kilo, big, you know, aggressive physical guy. So, but all those natures, all of Christ's nature, it fits perfectly in every way. Business, sport, it's his, what works best is his nature. And his order, you know, having purpose about what you're doing, you know, having compassion, all these sort of things, respect for your opponent. You can go on and on and on. Every part of God's nature makes a great, equals, can equal achievement, you know, in business, sport, whatever. So, you know, having discipline, you know, is a massive one. Being honest, you can just go on and on. So I just think the thing about professional sport and life in general, and this is the journey, you know, sanctification, you know, is, you know, getting tested. We become more Christ-like. We learn and we need to keep putting the Lord first in our life, and you see, you will be refined, you know, you'll. Sometimes it's not necessarily that you get the good marks that you wanted, or you get the business deal, or you win the grand final, but you know, for the purpose that you have, you know, that's far more important. You know, that God has for you. You know, you're refined and we become more Christ-like and you know, that's the journey.
Yeah, so good, mate. Look, we're talking about faith in God and the Bible now. So have you got a character in the Bible, a person in the Bible who just really inspires you, who you just love reading about?
There's a lot of them, you know. If you go back to Paul, you know, you said about Paul, and it's just crazy because anyone who's listening, Paul was the guy who was hunting down the Christians, you know, and he was the guy that held the cloaks while they stoned Stephen, you know, who was just an incredible guy, you know. And he, on the road to Damascus, it's well known, you know, the Lord confronts him. and doesn't use anyone else. It's face-to-face. Boom. Why do you persecute me? You know, and is it Aeneas, the guy who goes to sees? Is that his
Ananias,
name?
I think it was Ananias. Yeah, he went and prayed for him. Yeah.
The Lord speaks to Ananias in a dream or a vision or something, and says there's a man that's going to come to you, and when he comes, he's blind. He's been blinded for 3 days.
Yeah.
You're going to put your hands on his eyes and he's going to be able to see it. He's going to do stuff for the kingdom, you know, for the Lord. And Ananias says, this is the guy that's been hunting and killing and persecuting everyone. This is not the guy to be doing this. And, he just says, this is the guy. This is it's crazy. And the words that give me a shiver down my spine is where God says, I will show him what he must suffer for my name.
Yeah.
If you read the rest of the New Testament, it's rinse, repeat. He goes to a place. So he goes to see Ananias, he puts his hands on him, and Paul comes, submits his life to the Lord, and he has a mission now. The guy that you had the 11 disciples or 10 disciples, or because they got another one,
yeah,
died. They're the one, they fled when Jesus got taken to the cross, and then they died all around spreading the gospel. And then the main guy who was hunting down Christians is the main guy who took the Christian faith all throughout Turkey and everywhere, all the way to Rome.
Yeah.
And he'd go to a town and he would share the gospel, and some people would often be encouraged, and people would be interested. And then there would be a contingent amount of people who would stir the crowd up, and then he'd get beaten up or stoned or, all sorts of stuff. And then, over periods of time, they were different at different times, but he'd go to the next town, same thing happens again. Like, the amount of times he got, beaten up or put in jail, or, there's a time when he actually talks about it, might be later in the piece, where he says, I've been shipwrecked, 3 times. I've been out at sea for, pretty much, 72 hours or something. I've been beaten 5 times. He'd been whipped. I think it's 39.
39 lashes, yeah.
Which, if you had, that's 200 times. His back would have been absolutely crisscrossed. His back would be a mess.
Yeah.
His whole journey was a solid journey to, I think, where he's beheaded, had his head cut off in Rome, all for just presenting the gospel, in chains. And so he's a interesting guy to, talk about. There's many others, but yeah.
Oh, you've summed up his life pretty well. And what blows me away about him, Brad, is that, the Greeks had a very established religion. All of their literature, their myths, their legends involved all these Greek gods, which they'd worshipped for hundreds of years. And, the Greeks were a bit like you, mate. They were a dominant race. The Greeks had basically got rid of the Persians. The Persians outnumbered them. They tried to invade them a couple of times and they beat them, and they were a very dominant culture. Their philosophy, their maths, their science, many of the things the Greeks discovered we still, live by today.
Yep.
And so when you have a dominant culture like that, usually their religion is a big part of the culture. So it's very difficult for people to shift religions when they're so dominant. And yet Paul goes there, literally tears the place up. And today you see no trace of that ancient Greek religion, but you see the Greek Orthodox Church everywhere. Like, he literally changed the most dominant culture of his day. Yes, the Romans were militarily more dominant in Paul's time, but the Romans basically looked to the Greeks for their inspiration and their ideas, the philosophy and maths and science. And the Roman religion in many ways was a copy of the Greek religion. So, he destroyed a religion which was a dominant culture, which to me is just incredible. Like I said, Paul's life, there's been very few individuals who've ever lived on this earth that have done as much as Paul.
Well, was it not Athens where he went in and said they had all these gods, and is the unknown god. So they even had a god statue,
yeah,
an idol or a statue for the one that they may have not known about, and it was pretty cool. I always loved how he played that, and he said, you know that unknown god that you don't know about? I'm here today to tell you finally who yep. that is. And he gives the gospel, and boom, I just really love that. It was a really cool way of reaching those people,
Those Greeks, 100%. And these were the most intelligent, respected, and prideful yeah. men of the day in the whole world. Yeah. Athens was yeah. the center of culture. And
yes.
he just, like you said, preaching to them, tearing it up, and people are believing in Jesus. It is good, mate. The Book of Acts is a great book to read, isn't it?
Yeah, that you got to remember those Athenians. They were all about philosophy, and they had their great. They would have been up for a debate, and there would have been chat back and forth. So, yeah, God was at work in Paul, and Paul lived out his purpose, and there's many stories, I guess, throughout the Bible, you see that happen.
Oh, yeah, 100%, mate. And we're drawing to a close here. Brad, it's been so good listening to your story. It's incredible. But I just want to go back to your dad. Did your dad say, did your grandfather who served, I'm guessing your grandfather served in the New Zealand military in World War II? He was a Kiwi soldier?
He was in the north of Africa, went into Italy.
Yeah. Because I don't know if you know this, but the New Zealand soldiers were regarded as some of the best infantry in the world in World War II. And in North Africa, when the Germans surrendered, I don't know if you know this, but they said to the British generals, we'll only surrender to the Kiwis.
Oh,
so
really?
They actually, yeah, because the Kiwis were so respected in that North Africa, Western Desert campaign. Because a lot of them were country boys, and New Zealand was like Australia. A lot of our best soldiers were country boys as well. Yeah. But I'm guessing that your dad probably told you his dad never talked about the war. It probably traumatized him too much.
Yeah, he never talked about it. He had he had a journal where he wrote about being in Egypt, and some old lady was nice and talking about the pyramid. He'd seen a pyramid or something, and it was weird because he just sounded like you and I, and you sort of just think of the olden days, granddad. But I know that he, an Italian family took him in, and there was one time because how they went up into Sicily, and I don't know what his involvement was, but there was something where maybe there were Germans outside and they hit him or something. I don't know the history of this, of all what happened. I don't know anything, to be honest. But that's a few things that I heard. There's a lot of guys come back alcoholics. And the good story about granddad is he got to a point when my dad was going to marry my mum. He's 21 back in the baby boomers. They got married young, and Dad was pretty much begging Grandma to leave Granddad because it wasn't good. And I think Granddad, at that time, he went and saw a priest. He was Catholic. I think my grandma was Presbyterian. There's a bit of friction back in the day around that. But And I think the Catholic priest said, which is cool, he said to do AA, Alcoholic Anonymous, or whatever, And Granddad stopped drinking, and he ended up being a guy that other people were battling away. They could come around to his house and encourage him and stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
Aside from that, there was never that that connection with my dad. My granddad never was necessarily great, which is a real shame. But just a good to know that played out how it did with granddad, there's different journeys for people,
Totally, mate. And those guys were traumatized because, like I said, the Kiwi infantry, they were left over there for years. They went North Africa, like I said, they went into, they're in Crete, then North Africa, then to Sicily in that invasion. And you know yourself, mate, you can be the best at anything in the world, but if people are lobbing bombs and bullets at you, it doesn't matter how strong you are, you're not bulletproof. And the things your granddad would have seen would have just been horrible, mate. And that's why they came back, like you said, drinking so heavily. And my grandfather was the same. He was an Anzac and he would never talk about it. And I had an older cousin used to try and ask him questions. He'd actually get mad at him and just say, don't ever ask me this again. He was so traumatized through the war. He actually told us all that he was a stretcher bearer, you know, like a medic. And I was a bit embarrassed by that because I'm like, oh, I wish he'd be a soldier. I wish he would have, you know, done a bit of fighting.
They're brave, mate. They're
yeah, brave. I know. Well, let me finish the story. So after he died, we looked into his war records. He wasn't a stretcher bearer. He was a frontline soldier. He got shot in battle, but he just didn't want to talk about it. So he told us all he was a stretcher bearer. So no one asked him about what he actually went through in combat. And you're right, they were brave. But when you're an eight-year-old kid, you don't understand that. You just think, oh, mate, why didn't you have a gun? You should have been shooting the bad guys, you know. But, yeah, mate, so I just want to even honour your granddad, Brady, you know, like the things he would have seen and gone through, and none of us will understand unless we go through it. And that's probably why he didn't have a great connection to your dad. He probably didn't know how to express emotions. He would have been just so traumatised.
He didn't sleep well. I know that. He used to, yeah, there's times he wouldn't sleep well. So lots of nightmares. That's
I bet, mate. Yeah. But, Brad, mate, it's been such a joy just hearing your story, especially your faith journey, how you met Jesus and how he made you a better man. I mean, I watch rugby league. I watch union, probably more union than league, and I always knew who you were. And I didn't even know you were a Christian, to be honest, until a few years ago. But just to hear how strong your faith was that whole time and that you were just living for God while you were playing and how God just blessed you so much. And, I mean, how many players, I don't know, is it how many players can say, I've won the Rugby World Cup and the Australian, the World Rugby League Cup, provincial tournaments. You've won premierships with the Brisbane Broncos, which is one of the best rugby league clubs in the world. Like, God just allowed you to achieve so much. And I'm just really encouraged by the fact that he was the center of your life from the age of 23 onwards. Amazing.
Yeah, I think, if you think about Jason Stevens, everyone has a different purpose or a different way. Jason was, he was in the media. I don't know if you remember, he'd be on the Footy Show and, everyone knew about his faith. I had my faith, but I wasn't, I had my own purpose and stuff, you know. And in the last 25 years or so, or more, I had about 4 or 5 years where I didn't do any speaking at all because I needed to get my own house in order. It took me 3 years, by the way, to deal with alcohol.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it wasn't like I didn't just stop and I actually had to walk away from it for 6 years. I stopped drinking for 6 years because I felt like God said to me, you need to step aside from this.
Yeah,
awesome. And, it was going to hurt that alcohol wasn't a good thing, I think for me. But once I got to a space, 4 or 5 years, learning, coming to faith and, just initially being a new Christian and then I got opportunities to, go and speak or, go and do different things. And the reason I guess I got to do those was because of the things that God allowed me to achieve in my footy. And it didn't make me any better than anyone else or anything, but it just gave me opportunities to, I think, to be able to share about my faith. And sometimes that was just in the gym or on the training paddock. I've had chats on the training paddock, in the gym, everywhere, dinner tables. I've talked to guys all around the world. Whatever the Lord's, put in front of me, I've seek to be faithful. Many times I've fallen short, but he's my rock and my strength, and that's just how it's played out.
So good, mate. Well, I just want to encourage you, Brad. Just keep going, mate. Stay strong. It's so encouraging to hear about your journey until now. And you're no longer a footballer, but you're still a witness for the Lord. And I'm sure God's still got great plans for you. And just thank you so much for sharing your story today and Let's Go Deep. I know this is going to encourage a lot of people.
Awesome. I've really enjoyed the chat, Andrew, and it's been really cool. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, and if anyone is watching or listening now, maybe you don't know Jesus. Maybe you've never received him like Brad has and like I did too at a point in my life. I'd encourage you to do what Brad did. Just get somewhere quiet, alone. You don't need to kneel. You can if you want, but just say, God, if you're real, I want to know you. Jesus, I've heard about you. I kind of know you probably existed once upon a time. We have Christmas and Easter every year, but Lord, can I know you personally? Will you come into my life? And the Bible says whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. It's not about, as Brad said, becoming a good person. It's about letting Jesus make you a good person. So I'd encourage you to do that if you're listening right now and you've never done that before. For me, I still remember when I did it, Brad, I was 17. It's the greatest day of my life to this day. It's still the greatest day of my life. My life changed. My heart changed. And it can happen to anybody. And if you want to find out more, just go to our website, i2aw.org. That's intoalltheworldministries.org. And we'll be happy to send you a Bible and encourage you in any way we can. But once again, Brad Thorne, former international rugby union and rugby league player and all-around great guy. Thanks for sharing your story today on Let's Go Deep.
Thanks, Andrew. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Let's Go Deep with Andrew McLennan. If you enjoyed today's conversation, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss what's coming next. And you can watch the full episodes over on our YouTube channel. If you'd like to help us continue the mission, you can support the show by becoming a monthly partner. You can find everything at i2aw.org. That's i, the number 2, aw.org.